Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guests are Rachel Hockett and Arthur Bicknell. They are co-founders of The Homecoming Players, an Ithaca, New York-based theater company. Rachel Hockett is a graduate of Yale University. She has been involved in every aspect of theater, from acting to directing to stage managing, both here in New York as well as on the West Coast. She has worked at the Williamstown Theater Festival, the San Luis Obispo Little Theater, and the Shotgun Players in Berkeley, California. She has also taught acting to students age 4 to 18 in New York and California, and she is currently the artistic director of the Ithaca-based Homecoming Players. And Arthur Bicknell is a graduate of Ithaca College. He has worked as an English and drama teacher, served as editor and feature writer for the trade publication Show Business, and he was a tour director for the National Shakespeare Company. He is the author of several plays, including Masterpieces and My Great Dead Sister. He is the literary manager and resident playwright for the Homecoming Players. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Really good to have you both with me. You've both been involved with theater and living in different places, and you came back to Ithaca and decided to start a theater. There are so many theater companies here in Ithaca. What do you think this will offer that we don't already have?
Well, we hope it will offer a chance to collaborate with the existing theater companies and the very diverse talent that we have in Ithaca. And we also love Ithaca and wanted to return to our roots. We both lived elsewhere for 40 years before moving back to Ithaca in 2010. And it was thanks to Facebook that we reunited. We came to our Ithaca High School 40th reunion in 2009, and we were both at a point in our lives where a move was a very plausible idea.
It was very serendipitous. I remember us standing outside before we actually walked into the reunion with one other friend, and the three of us were sort of terrified. We weren't reunion people, you know.
I can understand
and
that.
And this was the 40th, which meant, okay. The thing about it was, though, that when you reach 40, it's not so much, so, where are you? What have you been doing? What are your accomplishments? How many kids? It's more, oh, good, you're alive. Good.
Let's collaborate and start a theater company, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, that too. But it was wonderful. And as Rachel said, we had so much in common. We couldn't, and it was the timing. It always is, isn't it?
It's always
down to timing.
Absolutely.
We were both ready to do something, to make some sort of a move, even though so many people, you know, at our age, people say, what? You do that in your 20s. You do that in your 30s. I mean, I've had people make fun of me for this. You know, what are you doing starting
theater? No, I think
it's
exciting. I think it's great. The love of theater, and you can go home again.
That's,
you guys have proved that.
That's what we're trying to prove.
So this is still a young entity. Tell us what your vision is. You say that you want to connect with actors nationally and bring in people locally. How are you going to go about doing that?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is to do enough shows that we raise a little bit of a profile. We found that's our biggest challenge because, as you say, there is a lot of theater going on in Ithaca, and we have run into some challenges finding a space to mount a fully mounted play. So what we've done is to take advantage of a venue at Ithaca College called the Hockett Family Recital Hall.
The name Hockett.
I was just going to say,
there's a little connection there. That lovely recital hall was a gift that my mother and father gave to Ithaca College, and thanks for all the years that they gave her as a professor there.
Wow.
And it's a beautiful hall. It's a beautiful recital hall. It's not particularly a theater hall. In fact, you can't really do a show in there because you can't tape anything to the floor and there's no theater lighting. But for a staged reading, it is ideal because it's very live and you can hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
So we opened with a play by Arthur last year when we first started called My Great Dead Sister. We did a reading of that. And now we're going to do this very exciting reading of 8. And we actually have a season planned for 2013, two more staged readings in the hall. And we're hoping that by then we'll be in a position to find a space, even a semi-permanent space, and start to mount plays fully, which is really what we want to do.
We welcome ideas.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and something in its infancy gives people opportunities to get involved and help you shape the whole vision of it. But let's go back to the fact that you're going to stage 8. This is an amazing thing that you guys announced a few weeks ago. Tell us about it. It's about Prop 8.
It's a play by Dustin Lance Black, who was the Oscar-winning screenwriter of the movie Milk. He and Rob Reiner are co-founders of the American Foundation for Equal Rights, and this was the organization that funded the federal lawsuit that dealt with the legality of Prop 8. So what Justin Lance Black has done is to write a play that is based largely on the transcripts of that trial. It's sort of more a polemic than a dramatic play, but the fact that the outcome of that trial was so pro-equality has made it just the perfect vehicle for forwarding and advancing the marriage equality
question. I was rereading it just this morning, and it's a... Well, of course, it's a courtroom drama. That's mm-hmm. ready-made drama.
Mm-hmm.
You've got it right there. But it is, it's dealing with real people. What struck me was I think it was Black's note to readers that there were lots of tears during this proceeding. But there was much more laughter. And I think that was a wonderful note to start us out with.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about the play. Is it all based on the court case, or did he bring in fictional characters just to show the human side of people wanting gay marriage?
He showed the human side, but with real characters. It is more documentary than it is fiction. It isn't fiction.
There's no fictional characters.
There may be some license taken here and there, but mostly it as Rachel said, it's very much a transcript. It does hinge on being a polemic at times. However, what saves it from that is what you just mentioned, the plaintiffs in the case are extraordinary. They're so real. And touching and moving. I mean, many of them, I think one of them says, she has a couple of sons and they're worried about, well, you know, I'm going to miss soccer practice to do this. I mean, what are you doing, Ma? And she's saying, well, I'm not quite sure. I've never sued Arnold Schwarzenegger before, dear.
That's right, yeah. Essentially they were suing the governor of California, the then governor of California, in regard to the legality of this proposition.
Right. Their claim was that it was unconstitutional for them to be discriminated against, that they could not marry, that they were in committed relationships and creating a family, and they were not entitled to the same benefits that families get. And so there were two pairs of plaintiffs. There was a gay couple and a lesbian couple. And I think that probably some of the dialogue that Dustin Lance Black gives them is surmise. It's not based on, you know, a microphone in the room when they were taking a break from the trial. But the words that are spoken by the witnesses and the lawyers and the judge are all taken from the transcript.
Wow. And as in any good drama, you've got heroes and you've got some great villains.
Were most of the villains opposed to this on religious grounds? I mean, that's what we kept hearing in the news.
Yeah, and I'm misleading by saying villains. No, opponents to,
I think a lot of people would call them villains.
Yeah.
I would. I'm happy to call them villains.
This case is eventually going to end up at the Supreme Court, right? I mean, so where does this play end?
Ends with the end of the trial in 2010 when, we don't want to give away the ending, but
But a lot of people know what the outcome
was. Yeah, that was the point at which the judge declared that, you know, there was no finding to discriminate against these couples. The problem with Prop 8 is that it won't die because the proponents of Prop 8 keep bringing it up again in different guises and in different ways and taking it one step further. So, yes, now the ultimate stop will be the Supreme Court, but they haven't yet said yes or no to taking the case. So it's still a little bit in limbo.
Yeah, I like to think of all this as kind of the death throes I may be being optimistic here, but
the
further we go, the more progress we make, the more they dig in their heels. No, you don't.
Yeah, I know.
You're not going to change, you know, what is this wrong side of history business?
I know. Things have changed so rapidly. It's been unbelievable to many of us. Tell us why the two of you are so passionately involved in this issue. You talk about it on Facebook. You talk about it in your theater information. Tell us.
Well, it's easy for me. I'm gay. Making that announcement on air, I feel great because I was closeted for so many, all of my childhood.
Mm.
Most of my young adulthood, I mean, you know, in circles I was okay, but always in circles, always with the protection.
Right.
It touches me so much, the people in this play who talk about how it's always a test. You're always, as a gay person, there's always another situation where you're coming out. You're coming out yet again. Yet again. What do you mean you want a king-size bed for just one room, you and your male partner? There's always almost like a test. Now, I have discovered that, you know, if you're more open, it can be, very often, it can be a good experience, but there's always that risk. There's always that risk that you're going to be met with cold, the conversation ending.
Yeah, or people being actually afraid of you suddenly,
yes,
and acting weird.
And as a non-confrontational people pleaser, I've had, you know, it just wasn't a day at the beach. I'm very happy that that is changing.
Mm-hmm.
But that, to answer your question, that is why, for me, this is extraordinarily important.
Uh-huh. And what about you, Rachel?
Rachel has her own.
Well, I am blessed to have been born and raised by parents who were very progressive, very liberal-minded, and had a great love of humanity, all humanity. And I've always agitated for justice. It's just sort of in my DNA. I also have family members who are gay and who are in committed relationships. I have nieces who have two sons, and there are other members of my family who have been married.
You're talking about gay people who have been married?
Gay people who have been married. And my significant otter here, Arthur, is gay. It's just, it's a lot of things came together at once in my mind, that this was something that I just couldn't stand by and watch happen without my participation. My main thrust in terms of this has been a Facebook page that I started called the Equality Mantra, which now has over 20,000 members. And I have met the most amazing allies and colleagues who are fighting and working so hard day and night to counter the hate, to counter the opposition, to make the world a better place, to bring more justice, to get marriage equality. We've got 6 states that have it. That's a woeful record. We really need it. Global marriage equality. Mm-hmm. Because really the only reason for there not to be, as far as I'm concerned, is bigotry and prejudice.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what has to be
because that was
countered.
That was what Prop 8 was suggesting, is that, well, gay people aren't as equal as straight people. It's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't deserve to be able to call each other husband or wife.
Yeah, yeah.
That is something sacred that is reserved to those of us who are heterosexual.
But you know what we need to go back to, though, and a lot of people have brought this up. It seems to me that you have to bring people out of the closet before you can bring them to the altar.
Yes.
So to counteract that prejudice that all gay men are just promiscuous, you know, I mean, the whole gamut of things that we've all heard through the... What about the other issues, though, of bringing people out of the closet? Is that part of your mission?
Well, we certainly try to create a safe place where people can feel free to be themselves and be embraced and be cared for and accepted for whoever they are. And we feature photos of same-sex couples, same-sex weddings, same-sex families, stories and videos, the trolls who come to the page to talk about how gay people should all be tied up and locked up and burned and sent to hell. I mean, I'm so vigilant, and I have a couple of co-administrators who we comb the page to just delete and ban those users, because this is not the place for that.
What I think is perhaps a little bit different these days about this situation is the amount of suicides, people just despairing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in my day, it wasn't so much of a problem because we weren't gay. We simply weren't. Whatever suspicions we may have had. No, I'm speaking generally. I'm sure there were, but the people
about
that I've talked
no
to,
no one knew.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, in the 60s, in the 50s, the 60s, it was you just suppressed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was unimaginable. It was such a taboo that you convinced yourself. You did everything you could to convince yourself that this horrible thing about being gay, this horrible perverse thing, wasn't really you.
Yeah.
So you fought it. You fought. And it's taken me, 60 years or a little less to realize, the freedom of just being who you are, that it's okay. You know.
Yeah, and it's become everyday life. If you're just joining us, my guests are Rachel Hockett and Arthur Bicknell. They're the co-founders and directors of the Homecoming Players. And we're also talking about some important issues that are on their mind. Well, why do you suppose so many people are so afraid of people getting married who aren't heterosexual? They always say it's going to destroy heterosexual marriage. What is that about, do you think?
this is where I could easily get on my podium, and I'll try not to, but I do think that...
this is a podium.
Well, then it... Effeminate men bug people. They always have. Mm-hmm. You can't throw a ball, you're not interested in sports, you're not a real man, what the hell is wrong with you? You're shunned. I've done it myself. As a gay man, I have shunned effeminate men. Yeah. They're just...
But a lot of people think they're acting that, you know, that they really aren't effeminate. You know, I know a lot of gay men who aren't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're being drama queens.
That is the stereotype.
Yeah, exactly.
That all gay men are effeminate. And some are, obviously. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, what do you think this comes from, Rachel?
I think there's a sense of threat from people who are other than us. And I think that homosexuality is just one example of a minority that needs to be ostracized for being other.
Right.
I mean, it's been Black Americans, it's been Jewish people all through human history. The majority needs somebody to demonize, whatever the majority is and whatever the minority is.
Yeah.
Really,
if I put you down, it makes me feel better.
Yeah, and, I mean, we're seeing that all over this country.
We really are, and we're very polarized right now. This country is shockingly polarized right now. And as Arthur said earlier, the closer we get to really achieving equality, LGBT and marriage equality, the more they dig in their heels, those who are opposed to it, because it just threatens them. There's some fundamental assumptions on their part that just feel like they can't be shaken.
Yeah. Well, Tish, you did mention it. There are a lot of people who feel that it's simply a choice and a very bad one.
Yeah, exactly.
Bad form.
Exactly. Well, let's go back to the homecoming players. Are you going to use the homecoming players as a forum for political plays and political work and to talk about the issues that are upmost in your mind that you're passionate about?
You know, when we first conceived of the homecoming players, I have to confess that was not foremost in our mind. Mm. We were much more about getting back together and doing theater in our own image after all these years of doing theater for other people and just following through on a bunch of ideas that we have. Arthur's a playwright. We both know a lot of very good playwrights that we'd love to get involved with. We're interested in workshopping plays, starting from scratch and developing something that can become a play, a sort of lab process, which I've always loved. I love the whole process of theater almost more than the performance itself. So that's really where my interest lies. But what I'm finding with this production of Eight is that there is something very gratifying about marrying, no pun intended, social justice and theater. It sort of enhances
what they're doing. I mean,
right.
So many people have used theater for political speech.
Right, right. And I think that it's a great way to do it because, you know, people don't even realize they're learning something when they're having fun, necessarily. And that's, you know, that can be very effective.
Yeah, I think theater and politics, it goes very well hand in hand myself. And I prefer plays with some kind of a message that you can take out of the theater with. Yeah, what about some of the plays that you've written? Have you written about your gay experience? Are you going to?
I hope to. The closest I've come is in the play that we mentioned earlier, My Great Dead Sister, which is... largely autobiographical. So we're dealing in that play with the 14-year-old me.
Ah.
And the 14-year-old me would not have said, I am gay. Well, the gay word didn't really exist then. But within the play, you can see some of the conflict. I would like to. I do. I'm very curious to see what I would write now that I am myself. Now that I am comfortable, now that I'm not afraid to let people know exactly who I am. I mean, this is relatively new for me, and it's very exciting. And as a writer, it's doubly exciting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's great potential. But to answer your question, no, not so much. I was going to see if I can get through one interview without mentioning this, but I guess I will.
Your memoir.
Yeah.
I'm sort of infamous. Well, I'm not, but I have a play that is. In 1983, I wrote a play that was picked up by a Texas oil man and put right on Broadway. I mean, straight from the typewriter to Broadway.
What was the name of this infamous play?
Some of the people out there may recognize the name Moose Murders, because Moose Murders has become... another a synonym for turkey and bomb. It is still the gold standard for awfulness in the theater.
Really?
To this day, and I'm awful proud of that.
But listen, did you know it was, or was it the way it was staged the thing that ruined it?
Oh, yes.
Both. How interesting. Well, you know what? Claim to fame.
There are thousands and thousands upon thousands of people who claim to have been at that one mm-hmm. performance. Everybody wants a piece of it. How many did the theater hold? 800?
Oh, about 1,300.
Yeah.
So. So you've written a memoir about this bomb, and you're proud of it.
Yes. It was, talk about catharsis. Yes, I have, and hopefully we'll be seeing that soon. There is going to be a revival of it, of the play itself, which I am working on for early next year.
So is it going to be like a teaching tool for how not to write a play? How are you going to revive it?
Well, I like to look at it that way, yes. I mean, it's a damn good story, because it's Schadenfreude, you know. It's like, oh, he really, really failed. This is so exciting.
People love that.
And this next page is even worse than the, I know that. But yes, I think, seriously, you can look. I do try to give some of the wisdom over the years that I've been trying to figure
out. Well, tell us the name of it before we...
Yes, the book is called Moose Murdered. And it has a subtitle, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love My Broadway Bomb, which is
it's a perfect Hollywood title, Arthur. Now, let's talk about the collaboration you're doing on 8 with the American Foundation for Equal Rights and Broadway Impact.
Okay.
So tell us a little bit more about those organizations.
Those two organizations are the sponsors of this national series of staged readings, and we had to apply to get a slot to get the free rights for one night only performance, and it is only one night. I think we could probably do more than one and get an audience, but that's the deal.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And what they've done is to make this play available to theaters and community theaters and professional theaters and universities all over the country, so that there are readings happening in all the corners of the country.
I think I read mm-hmm. that they just got their 200th assignment.
Well, so what is the American Foundation for Equal Rights? Is it a theater group, in
no,
fact?
No, it's not. It's a it's the foundation that was formed specifically to fund this federal lawsuit about Prop 8.
Ah.
And that's why this play fits so well into their mission. And Rob Reiner is one of the co-founders and directed the L.A. premiere of 8, which was a star-studded.
Oh, I know. I saw that. Brad Pitt was in it and
yes.
all kinds of people. I saw pictures of that. Yeah.
It's comprised of a lot of theater professionals, not just actors, but
right.
producers and directors and stage managers and fans
right.
of theater.
Yeah. I know a lot of people know that the theater is packed with gay people.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course it makes sense.
Right.
Well, what about Broadway Impact? Now, that's got to have to do with Broadway people, right?
That's right. That's a theater organization that sponsors equality-related plays and issues and productions. And so the two organizations have teamed up to create this series. And we were thrilled, absolutely thrilled, to be given the green light.
Oh, I know. It's great to bring it to a place like Ithaca, too.
I know, really.
Now, were there any stipulations? Do you have to have professional actors do this? Did they tell you you
had to do
certain
things? You don't have to, but there's as with anything, there's lots of paperwork. We do have two equity actors in our show, and so we had to do the whole application to Equity to get permission to have them in the show. And we've had to get approval of all our printed material. There's a branding for the across the productions of 8, and so our posters and our press release and our program all have to look like this, this design. I mean, we really are part of a much bigger program than just ourselves.
And so why are they doing this? Just to change minds and teach people about the whole experience, or is it a fundraiser for gay equality? Or?
It's a fundraiser for AFER, and AFER's mission is to promote marriage equality. It's as simple as that, and they're raising money to keep the conversation going, to do the work that needs to be done to change hearts and minds, one at a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you guys have read this play, but I've only heard excerpts from it. How do you think it will affect people? What do you think they'll take away?
As I was saying earlier, it is very the real people, gay and straight, are very moving, how they are put into this particular situation. Many of them have no idea what... They've never done this before. Yes, there are... Here we have the plaintiffs who are not particularly confrontational people.
Mm-hmm.
who find themselves in a steeped in this inherently dramatic situation, fighting for equality, fighting just for the right to call my partner my wife,
mm-hmm.
my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how one could actually stay cold by watching this, frankly.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the conversation that hasn't happened around this issue, the human cost of this yeah. kind of discrimination. And do you know people personally, I mean, that have, you know, suffered that human cost because they weren't
sure
able
we
to marry? To talk to us a little bit about how gay marriage is going to change so many people's lives.
Well, the perfect case in point for us today is that our honored guests at our reading are going to be a couple called Steve Hill and his husband Josh Hill, who finally got an approval to change their name in the state of Ohio, which does not have marriage equality, but they are legally married. They were married in D.C. a year ago. Steve Snyder was the Army officer who was famously booed at the GOP debate last fall when he called in a question about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and the audience went, boo! And here's a man who's done three tours of duty in Iraq and other places serving his country. He was never able to be open about who he was until Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. And all he wanted to do most recently was to change his name along with Josh so they could have the same last name. They're married.
Just before I was telling, I mean, I was an unathletic kid growing up, terrified of, you know, people knowing that I was gay. And my thought at that time was, well, you know, a brawny, hunky, masculine person would never be gay. And it just it blows my mind that it doesn't matter what you look like, who you are, none of that. You're gay. And you're admitting it, and you're it blows
it's,
my mind.
It's a revelation to a lot of people,
it
especially
really is.
Kids that are being bullied, kids that feel like they're all alone.
Oh.
I mean, that goes back to, you know, we need to encourage people to come out of the closet for that reason, too. They need role models, you know, they need mentors. Well, you know, we are almost out of time. Give us some contact information. Tell us when the play is going to be staged. Talk to us.
Okay. It's one night only. It's Friday, August 10th at 8 p.m. We're advising everybody to get there by 7 o'clock because we think we're going to fill the Hockett Hall. It's the Hockett Family Recital Hall in the Whalen Music Center at Ithaca College. And if you're interested in tickets or in supporting the work we're doing, you can write to me at rachel@thehomecomingplayers.org.
Mm-hmm. And what about your Facebook blog that you
started?
Oh,
we have a Facebook page for the Homecoming Players,
mm-hmm.
and there's also the Equality Mantra,
which is
not exactly connected to the Homecoming Players, except when I make the connection. But there are a number of wonderful pages for equality issues on Facebook.
I think we also have a page on Facebook for Eight the Play.
That's right. Eight the Play has its own page, and AFRA has a page on Facebook.
Any number of ways to find us.
Yeah.
Well, great. The conversation will continue. Thank you guys both so much for doing
thank
this.
Thank you for having
and
us.
Thank
Dish.
You for joining me. It's Rachel Hockett and Arthur Bicknell from the Homecoming Players. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.